Okay, I'm going to talk to you about dynamic construction of Bluetooth scatter nets. I'm going to give you a general introduction on Bluetooth and stuff, but the technical part of the talk is joint work with Lali Barriere, Pierre Fugno, Yaroslavo Paterny, and it's going to appear in SODA next year. So here's a quick outline of my talk. I'm going to tell you what Bluetooth is. Probably most of you know, maybe there are few who don't, and describe what piconets and scatternets are, say what we think are desirable properties for Bluetooth scatternets to have, and then tell you about some previous work. There's not a whole lot. Tell you about our own work and what other problems there are to look at. The stain is on the... I was wondering if it was my slide. Okay, what is Bluetooth? Bluetooth is an open specification for short-range wireless voice and data communications. By short-range, we mean something like 10 meters, maybe up to 100 meters, not more. And it was originally developed as a cable replacement technology. So the idea is that, you know, there'll be people who have, say, for example, the goal was that you have people who have, you know, a palm computer, a laptop, a cell phone, and you want to facilitate on-demand connectivity between these devices using wireless communication. Now, a colleague recently told me that he read an article that they are thinking about putting Bluetooth chips in automobile parts, so who knows what kinds of applications might be possible. The idea was conceived at Ericsson in 1994, and a special interest group was formed by five major industry players. And by now, a number of companies have participated in the SIG, and many companies are already manufacturing the chipsets. There was some talk a year ago or so that Bluetooth is dead, especially around the time that 802.11 standards were published, but now it seems to not be dead after all. Either it never died or it got reincarnated. And the idea is that they can coexist, 802.11, and in fact, and Bluetooth. In fact, there's a new group, IEEE 802.15, which is looking at wireless personal area networks, and they have adopted basically the Bluetooth spec, and there's a group that is studying coexistence with 802.11. So the idea is that both technologies will exist. Well, some places I've read that whether we like it or whether consumers need it or not, so many companies have invested so much in Bluetooth that it's going to be pushed down consumers' throats. So it is going to be around. That's the idea. So a little bit more. Bluetooth, the goal is to have a low cost. So the cost is supposed to be something like $5. That's what's imagined, you know. So low cost, power efficient, single chip. Bluetooth uses fast frequency hopping in the unlicensed 2.4 gigahertz band. In Bluetooth, a small cell is called a piconet, and it consists of a master and up to 7 slaves. Some of this you've seen this morning, because there was a talk also on Bluetooth. I'll probably go into a little bit more detail. A Bluetooth network has a scattered ad hoc topology, so a number of piconets can either coexist or interoperate. Okay, this will hopefully become a little clearer. Because of the nature of what kinds of applications we expect to use Bluetooth, it's important that networks be self-configurable, and there should be an easy mechanism for participating in a network, okay, joining in an existing network or forming new networks, and this should be possible to auto-configure. Okay, a little bit more on piconets. As I said, we can think of a piconet as the Bluetooth version of a cell. And in terms of the graph representing it, it has a star topology. So I have a master, and in the current Bluetooth specification, up to 7 slaves. You can also have more slaves which are in parked mode. They are in low power standby mode, but they're not actively participating in the piconet. Okay, so each device has to be in either master or slave mode and or standby mode, but there's a few different low power modes in Bluetooth. Okay. Well, actually, it's clear from this slide. It's clear from here that slaves do not have any mechanism for direct communication. All, if two slaves want to communicate within a piconet, they must communicate via the master. Okay, so there's no mechanism for direct slave-to-slave communication. All communication is through the master. That's what the first thing says. You can have up to 7 simultaneous slaves. Somebody asked me during lunch, why 7? What's so good about 7? Well, as we're going to see, the master actually tells which slave should speak, tells the slave to speak in the next time slot. And so it needs to address the slave. And 7 means that you have fewer bits in that address. So it's quite possible that in future Bluetooth implementations, it may not be 7, it could be more. Okay, but currently it's 7. A terminal can be put in low power mode. There are 3 different modes, hold, sniff, and park. And the differences are basically, you know, do you go to sleep for a fixed amount of time, or, you know, how often do you synchronize back with the master and things like that. So each piconet has its own hopping sequence. So there's a set of channels, and it hops between these channels using a pseudo-random sequence. And each piconet has its own hopping sequence. Okay, so since each piconet has a different hopping sequence, I mean a pseudo-random sequence, it's possible for different piconets to coexist in the same area without causing interference, because they're all hopping on different sequences, even though they're using the same channel. of course, as the number of piconets grows, it's going to degrade. Okay, so as you don't want to have too many piconets for this reason. How does communication happen within a piconet? Well, within a piconet, members share a channel using a time division multiple access mechanism. In particular, masters and slaves alternate transmit and receive states, so that you can think of it as an even slots, the master transmits, and in odd slots, the master listens, and the slaves are the opposite. But which slave should transmit in a particular time slot? Well, the master decides that, and he decides that by polling. So there's no contention access mechanism for the slaves to sort of contend for the channel. Okay, so the master says, okay, it's your turn to speak next. In next slot, you are going to speak, and so on. Okay, so that's how communication happens within a piconet. A little bit on how the piconet formed in the first place. I call this device discovery. How's the piconet formed? Well, Bluetooth specifies 2 procedures for this. So there's an inquiry procedure and a paging procedure. The inquiry procedure, basically, a device can either be in an inquiry mode or inquiry scan state. And so if you have a device that's looking for other devices, it may broadcast an inquiry packet. And another device that's listening and that's in the inquiry scan state will now respond after some amount of time. I'm not going into the details of this. I just want you to have an idea of how this inquiry and paging procedure works. So how devices are discovered, rather. So somebody, a device that's listening may respond it has to respond with a frequency hop synchronization packet. And at that point, the inquiring device goes into page mode, and the other device goes into page scan mode. And now the one which was inquiring can be the master, and it can page the device whose address it now knows. And so this paging procedure is much shorter. Okay, so at the end of this, the two of them are going to be connected. So there's going to be a master-slave connection formed between two devices. So this is the inquiry scan procedure that's specified by Bluetooth. There's people working on the details of this as well. So I've given you enough details on how Bluetooth works that are relevant for what I'm going to be presenting. But I just want to point out some differences between Bluetooth networks and standard ad hoc networks, okay, what we normally think of as ad hoc networks. The first thing is that in the unit disk model of an ad hoc network, we assume that if two nodes are within transmission range of each other, then they are connected. Okay, this is not the case in Bluetooth. Two nodes could be within transmission range of each other, but they're not necessarily connected. Okay, in fact, the connection has to be specifically made using the inquiry scan, inquiry page procedure I just mentioned. In particular, it may be that I have 100 devices all within transmission range, but the links that are actually present can be only a small subset of the possible links, of the links that are actually possible. Okay, so that's the first difference. The second difference is that unlike in standard ad hoc networks for peer-to-peer networks where nodes can all be assumed to be the same, in Bluetooth, nodes play distinct roles. They have to be either master or slave. Okay, and this makes a difference in terms of your connectivity. All right, so that's another difference. And thirdly, in standard ad hoc networks, all nodes are assumed to use the same channel, and that's why you end up having problems like the hidden terminal problem and so on. Here, each PicoNet uses one channel. Okay, so every PicoNet could be using a different channel, and so they can all be communicating at the same time. Communication can be going on in all of them at the same time. Okay, so we know how to form a network of up to 8 devices, okay, and how communication happens within there. And we also know that they can coexist. You can have different networks of 8 devices in the same area without any problems. But what if you need a bigger network? Well, this is what Bluetooth calls a scatter net. And scatter nets basically are a way of, they're bigger networks in Bluetooth where PicoNets are connected with each other. And how do you connect multiple PicoNets? Well, you may use what's called a bridge node, a node that participates in multiple PicoNets. Okay? So a bridge node participates in more than one PicoNet in a time-sharing basis. So it participates in PicoNet 1 for a certain amount of time and then PicoNet 2 for it can participate in second PicoNet later. Now, bridge nodes can therefore provide, they can forward packets from one PicoNet to another PicoNet. Now, Bluetooth doesn't, the specification is doesn't say a whole lot about scatter net formation. Yes? Yeah? Could you? I can't hear you very clearly. You're talking about this node here? Yes? To speak, yes. But at some point, I may wish to, if this slave is going to participate in this PicoNet, presumably this master knows at that point. It's not going to be participating in this one for a while. Is that your question? This is a node which is a slave in this PicoNet as well as in this PicoNet. Okay, so it may participate in this PicoNet for some time. And then it may be in hold mode or it will be inactive in this PicoNet for a while and then it will be active in this PicoNet. But it's on a time sharing basis. It cannot be active in both simultaneously. Is that what you're asking? Because both are using different hopping sequences. Okay, so when I'm transmitting on a particular hopping sequence, I'm only active in this PicoNet. I cannot be transmitting simultaneously to both masters. If that was your question.
Yes.
Okay. So, is there a restriction? No. The specification does not restrict it, but I believe there are reasons to restrict the number of PicoNets you can be in. But the specification doesn't say that. Okay. What the specification does say is that a master cannot be a master in more than one PicoNet. So a node can be a master in at most one PicoNet, but a slave can be a master in as many PicoNets as you like. And the specification also does not forbid a node from being a master in one and a slave in many other piconets. Okay, it's just that you can be a master in only one piconet. Right? And the reason for this, the fact that you can be a master in only one piconet, is that while you, let's say you're a master in two piconets, piconet 1 and piconet 2, all communication in a piconet has to go through the master. And therefore, while you're participating in piconet 2, piconet 1 is completely held up. Nothing can happen over there. Therefore, it's not reasonable for a node to be a master in two piconets. This is not the case for a node which is a slave in two piconets. Okay, other stuff can still be going on in one piconet. Yes? Yes? It's trying to forward, yes. 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 So suppose, for instance, for some reason I can't see this very clearly at all. But suppose this slave here wants to send something to this slave here, okay? It could go through this master, through the bridge, to the other master, and then to this slave. Okay? The bridging slave is what? Hops?
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes. No, as soon as you, well, in the first place, even in a single piconet, if two slaves want to communicate, they have to go through the master. So there's not single hop communication in any case. But once you start having a scatter net, and even though two nodes may be in direct transmission range with each other, if they are not specifically connected as a master and a slave, they will have to follow a multi-hop path. Yes. Okay. It doesn't look like a bridge, this node? Okay, well, I show that it's a bridge by painting it blue. No, I'm just joking. It is member of both. I don't know exactly how you would... I don't really see, I guess, why it's confusing. Yes? Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So let's say, as I said, this one wants to speak to this one. Yes. Yes. Well, it already knows. Since it is already part of the piconet, it already knows.
Okay.
So this scheduling problem is by no means trivial. Okay, how does a bridge participate in both piconets? How do we schedule slots for different slaves? It's not a well understood problem at all. Well, the polling sequence in each piconet is not necessarily random. Okay, we don't know. It could be anything. It could be that but it can also depend on the application. It may be that this slave and this master have a lot of communication to do. So maybe six or, you know, seven slots out of eight, I give this to this one. And this one only gets a chance every, you know, 64 times or something. So it's not random. It's not like round robin. It can be anything. Okay, and how to schedule it can depend on the application. Okay, polling just means that the master determines, and it's not that slaves are going to contend for access. Okay, so in this case, you know, it may be that you have a fixed, you know, that you agree in advance that, well, for the next little while, I'm going to be participating in that, but I'm going to come back after this amount of time. That could be one way of doing it. Okay. Okay. All right. Is it, even though you felt my notation was confusing, you understand now that this is a bridge node and so on? Okay. All right. I think I have said some of this stuff, but to repeat. A node is forbidden from being a master in more than one piconet, but a bridge node can be a slave in both piconets. I have said both, but as I clarified, it can be multiple, it can be more than two, or it can be a master in one and slave in another. Okay, but very little so far is known on techniques for forming scatternet. I'll tell you about what kind of work there is. But before we talk about the scatternet formation problem, I'd like to point out that there are a few different models one can look at. So the first model is, what is the transmission range of, I mean, how close are the nodes to each other? We can think about this as the conference room scenario versus large scale network. Conference room scenario, the idea is that all nodes could potentially talk to each other. They're all within transmission range of each other. So if you think about the visibility graph, or some, you know, who I could possibly see, it's a complete graph. Okay, everybody can see everybody else. But now we have to decide which connections to exactly form, because we have degree constraints, right? I can see all 100 nodes, but a master can only have 7 slaves. So I have to decide which links to actually form and how to connect them to form a scatternet. Okay, that's the conference room scenario. The other scenario is a large-scale network, which is what Ivan looked at this morning, which is you don't necessarily see everybody. It's geographically much more dispersed than that. Okay, but I may still see a lot more nodes than I can actually form links with. Okay, so I can't form links still with everybody I see, but I don't see everybody. It's not even possible to form links with everybody. So that's a different. So these are two different problems that we'd have to look at. The second thing is, well, bridge nodes. What do we allow for bridge nodes? As I said, the specification doesn't say, oh, you can't be a bridge in more than, you know, 3 piconets or something. It doesn't say anything about it. So should we have a bound on the degree? It makes sense to have a bound on the degree because the bridge node is a bottleneck. It's going to forward traffic from one piconet to another, and if it's participating in several piconets, it's not going to be able to do this job very well. So it makes sense to bound the degree of the bridge node to a small number. The next thing is, should bridge nodes be allowed to be master in one and slave in another? Okay, people have looked at both scenarios, but one argument for saying no here is again the same thing. Let's say I'm a master in piconet 1 and a slave in piconet 2. While I'm forwarding traffic from 1 to 2 and therefore behaving as a slave in piconet 2, in piconet 1 traffic is completely held up. It's completely inactive. Okay, nothing can happen in piconet 1 while I'm participating as a slave in piconet 2. So that could be a good reason to say it should not be a master in one and slave in another. Bridge nodes must be slaves in all piconets that they participate in. This is a view that we take in our work. But as I said, people have looked at the other one as well, where a node can be a master in one and slave in one or two or however many other piconets. Yes? Sorry? No, communication only happened between masters and slaves. So I don't know what. So. No, so here I have a master talking to a slave. All right. And now? Well, that this is then a bridge node. And it's a master slave bridge node. What? Well, this is still a bottleneck. This is still a bottleneck because if this master has lot, in fact, I feel it's more of a bottleneck. This is what I was trying to say. No, I know, but. The bottleneck is not simply because of waiting to be polled. Let's say you're still. It's just the fact that all the traffic has to pass through you to go to the other piconet. You know, the polling thing is not necessarily such a big deal. It could be. It could be, but that's not the only factor, you know. The major factor is that traffic has to travel through the bridge node. Okay, so in this case, that would still be the case. All traffic from this to anything which is connected here has to go through this node. And this has the additional disadvantage, as I was saying, that while this node is being a slave in this network, sorry, this is wrong. It is right. While it is participating as a slave in this network, this piconet is completely held up. Okay, so allowing master slave, you know, does have that disadvantage. Yes.
From what you said so far, it would be possible to have one complete cycle going around there, master slave, master slave, master slave.
Yes.
Does that bring the whole thing to a screeching halt?
If I have a loop. For example, like this?
Well, not
like this exactly, but this is a master slave, but this is actually a master in this piconet.
Yes,
and so on. Yeah, this is possible. But I don't see why does it bring everything to a halt? I'm not seeing it. Why should it bring everything to a halt?
Well,
it's fine. I mean, what's the problem with this? Because you're sort of focusing on a particular polling mechanism. But you know, if you do have something, you could have arranged something in advance for how this should work. Okay, you're sort of focusing on the fact that the master has to say, you know, you have to speak next or something like that. I don't believe this is a problem. Okay, I don't think this is a problem. I actually thought I was spending too much time on the preliminaries, but obviously I wasn't, because it's half an hour into the talk and I've not gotten to the technical part of the talk at all. I think it's because you may have a particular polling thing in mind, and that's not necessarily true. I didn't even get to the last thing, which was a dynamic versus static. Okay. The last thing we might consider is what kind of problem do we want to solve? One version is, which several people have looked at, is that you have a bunch of nodes in a room and they all somehow wake up at the same time and want to form a scatter net. Now we have to do this. Okay? So that's, now we have to form a scatter net. So I call that the static problem, because they are all in the same place and they are all starting together in a sense. All n nodes that we want to have in the scatter net are there at the same time. The other problem to look at is the dynamic problem, where nodes may come and join and leave when they want. So nodes join, you know, I may have a new node wanting to join a pre-existing scatter net, and then it wants to leave, or some other node wants to leave. And here you want to ensure that when a node leaves or when a node joins, it doesn't cause much disruption to too many nodes. Okay, it tries to disrupt as few nodes as possible, and you may be interested in the bit complexity and message complexity needed in order to achieve joining the scatter net while still maintaining good properties. Okay, so the dynamic scenario is another thing which can change exactly what you can do. Okay, so what some of these things you've said they're model specific, but what are desirable properties for scatter nets? We want to form scatter nets. What would we like to have? A few of these things I've already alluded to. We want to have a small degree of bridge nodes. Okay, bridge nodes must have small degree because they form a bottleneck in transferring traffic from one piconet to another. So the second thing is that we want to also have a small number of piconets. We don't want to have, connect every piconet to every other piconet, for example, because there are limited number of channels available. Okay, I haven't, k, let's say, is the maximum number of slaves a master can have. N minus 1 by k is a lower bound on the number of piconets. However, n is an upper bound, because a node can be a master in at most one piconet. So in the worst case, every node is a master of a piconet. Okay, but then you can't have more piconets than that, because every piconet needs a master, and a node can be a master in at most one piconet. So the number of piconets is between n minus 1 by k and n. But within this range, you want to make sure that you have as small a number of piconets as possible. What else do you want? You want small diameter, maximum number of hops. As usual, in networks, we generally want small diameter, because this minimizes latency. But of course, we also want small degree of nodes. So if we have constant node degree, we can't do better than omega log n for diameter. Okay, so these two things sort of go against each other. A fourth thing that not too many people have talked about, but a few have, is we want high connectivity to reduce congestion and to reduce and to provide fault tolerance. Okay, so when we One thing I'd point out here is that then this sort of goes against this, the small number of piconets here. Because one thing you could do is that, you know, everybody's just off in their own piconet and you have very few connections with other networks. That's the way to have a small number of piconets. However, you won't have high connectivity that way. So these two things go against each other, and these two things go against each other. So you want a number of things that sort of contradict each other. Okay?
You want to see why you really want a small number of piconets, because every time you have piconets, you get to use the frequencies. You get to use that one channel that hops around. If I have five, I get five times the capacity. I have a small chance of collision, but the more piconets I have, the more capacity I have.
The more piconets you have, the more capacity you have. This is true. But beyond a certain point, you have a certain number of channels that you're going to hop in between. Everybody's choosing a random hopping sequence. The probability of collisions goes up as the number of hopping sequences you're using goes up. So if you're going to use, you know, when you're having 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, it may be okay when you have 79 channels to hop between. But as you use more and more hopping sequences picked at random, the chances of collisions are just going to go up and the quality is going to degrade.
Well, but the studies have already shown that you could have like 20 overlapping piconets and get a 10% chance of collision, which is...
But I'm not talking about 20 piconets. I might be talking about hundreds and so on. So you're right. You can't have no. Why can't you have 100 if you have 79 channels? I'm choosing sequences between those 79 channels, so I can have a lot more. No, well, the chances of collisions become higher. Exactly. So, but you can have more than 100 piconets. You absolutely can. The number of hopping sequences is much more, right? Because I'm choosing. So it's. No, but I'm going to hop. I'm not using a distinct channel. Everyone is not using a distinct channel. I'm using a hopping sequence.
That's fine, but at any given point in time, you're going to transmit in one of those 79 channels. If you generate 100, then you know for sure there will be lots of collisions.
There will be collisions, but I don't agree that there will be lots of collisions. And exactly, there will be. But the whole point in CDMA systems is that you do have collisions. Your quality degrades, but you can still have all these existing. Unlike in, you know, FDMA systems where everybody can, you can only have 79. Here you could have a lot more, but as you have more, the service, the quality degrades. Okay? So you could have more, but that's, you're pointing out to the reason why I want to have small number of piconets. I don't want to have way too many. Because the more I have, the worse my quality is going to be. Because the more the chances of collisions will be. But okay, it's not okay. You're saying you don't. Okay, you're saying we need to. We shouldn't have it become too big, but we don't necessarily need to minimize it because that would reduce capacity. That may be true. That may be true. That, you know, it's true that the more piconets you have, the more capacity you have. But at some point, it may be that you do have to minimize it because the chances of collisions becomes more important than the question of capacity. Okay, but I agree that these are two sort of conflicting things. But in general, you know, what I'm trying to say here is that you can have, you can sort of say, you can form many piconets by saying everybody is connected to somebody else in a piconet. Remember, people can only talk directly if they're in a piconet. So you could say that, okay, but that can also cause problems. So you don't want to really do that. You don't want to say form as many connections as possible in piconets, is what I'm trying to say. Okay, now this connectivity thing that I mentioned at the end, I said it's to reduce congestion and provide fault tolerance. How do I measure connectivity? So there's two measures. Well, one of them is a standard measure in networks, bisection width. And this is the smallest number of connections whose removal would bisect the network or cut it into two equal-sized parts. That may be a measure of connectivity. And the reason we look at this usually is that, you know, we assume that one half of the network, you know, what if it has to send data to the other half of the network, then it has to cross at least this minimum number of connections. And so it provides a lower bound of the amount of time that it would take to transfer data from one half of the network to another. So that's the reason normally to look at bisection width. But we also propose this other measure, which is M connectivity, which is the smallest number of connections whose removal separates two masters. Now, why masters? Because slaves, by definition, at least unshared slaves, they have low connectivity. If you have an unshared slave, it only has one connection to its master. So you remove that connection, it disconnects the slave. Okay, so it doesn't really make sense to look at the connectivity of slaves, at least unshared slaves. So we look at connectivity of masters. Okay, and you can see actually that if bridges are required to be of slave-slave type, then the connectivity is less than or equal to P minus 1, where, I'm sorry, I just noticed this morning that I'm using both P and K to mean the number of slaves, maximum number of slaves allowed. Okay, I'm sorry about that. So since a master can only be connected to P minus 1 slaves, that would also form, it can't be better than that, the connectivity. Okay, so let me just, we are looking at what kinds of, so first we look at what kinds of topologies make sense for scatternet. So I'll give you some simple ones first, and then describe some of the work people have done. Okay, so maybe we can have a star topology, where there's one node that plays a bridge between all piconets. So this node here, the blue one, is actually a bridge. And all these are other piconets. But you can see that the bridge actually participates in this one as well as in that one and so on. Well, okay, the diameter is great. Diameter is 4, but the bridge node has a high degree. And not only that, the connectivity is low. So if I remove this link, I can disconnect two masters if I look at that measure of M connectivity. So this is not necessarily a great topology. At the other extreme, they may have a line topology. So here, I have used this node as a master in this piconet, but it's a slave in this piconet. This one is a master of this piconet, but a slave in this piconet, and so on, just to show you the other model. But of course, you can easily modify this to the situation where you have only slave-slave by putting a slave in the middle here. Okay? So, but in this case, too, now, the advantages are that the bridge nodes have degree 2. So in the previous slide, the bridge node had high degree. That wasn't good. But now the diameter becomes pretty big. Okay, so we don't like that either. And once again, the connectivity is also low here. By just cutting one of these connections, I can separate two masters. Diameter is the maximum number of hops between any, take all pairs of nodes, and take the shortest paths between pairs of nodes, and the maximum of these is the diameter. Complete? Well, somebody did propose a complete network. The extreme, other extreme would be the complete graph. But in fact, the complete graph, if you have a bound on the size of the piconet, doesn't work beyond a certain n. So it doesn't generalize to all n. But however, this is what was proposed by one, which I will mention shortly. So another topology which balances the degree and the diameter might be a tree topology. Okay, may look like this. You have a master, and it has 7 slaves, but these slaves now act as bridges to the next layer. Okay, so this node is now a master of this piconet, this one is a master of this piconet, and so on. Is this clear, this tree topology? So now here, bridge nodes have degree 2, no problem. So it's really just a tree, a standard tree, okay, P minus 1 or tree, except that I'm going to insert slave nodes, the bridge nodes in between every level, because I want to keep it as slave-slave nodes, if I want to keep it as slave-slave nodes, bridges. So in this case, however, the problem is, so the diameter is order log n, can't be better than that. Bridge nodes have degree 2, that's pretty good, but the connectivity is low, okay, and in particular, the root is a bottleneck. So if any subtree wants to communicate with any other subtree, they have to go through the root. So the root becomes a bottleneck in this topology. Okay, so this is why I might not want this either. So let me just quickly describe some previous work that people have done. This was probably the first paper on Bluetooth scatternet formation. It was by Salonidis and Bhagwat and a couple of other people. It was Infocom 2001. And the model they looked at is that all nodes are within transmission range. Bridge nodes have degree 2, but they can only be slave in both piconets. They cannot be mastered in one and slave in another. And they didn't look at the dynamic scenario. So all nodes are there at once. Okay? So, and now you have to form a scatter net. So basically it goes in two phases. The first phase is a leader election phase. So you find a leader. And then the leader, it knows about all other nodes in the network. It knows all their addresses and so on. And it just deciphers topology and tells, knows who the other masters are going to be. So it forms a temporary piconet with the masters now acting as slaves and tells them, okay, now you connect to so-and-so, so-and-so. You are a bridge between. So the leader decides everything. Okay? The topology is fully connected. This is what you were asking. So, so you can see here that every piconet has a slave which acts as a bridge to every other piconet. Okay, so here, this is a bridge between these two, this is a bridge between these two, and so on. But the problem is, you know, you only have 7 slaves, or P minus 1 slaves. So at some point, you can't continue this anymore. So this only works, they say, for N less than or equal to 36, and they say, well, for N greater than 36, other techniques will have to be discovered. They don't really say what. Okay, so, That was that algorithm. There was another paper by Law, Mehta, and Siu, which is also a similar model, except that they also allow master-slave nodes. In this case, basically, you can they merge the two phases. Instead of having a separate leader election phase and then the leader doing everything, they're forming piconets at the same time as finding a leader, in a sense. All right? And they, so they have sort of a, you know, every node starts off in its own component, and every component has a leader, and now they're going to merge components, and they give a variety of rules on how to merge components, and they show that eventually the graph is connected. They also prove a bound on the number of piconets. They don't prove any bounds on the diameter of this. I also believe it's not dynamic. For the large-scale network, the remaining things I have are on the large-scale network scenario. So here, there was a paper also in 2001. So here, not all nodes are not necessarily in transmission range of each other. And bridges can have master-slave roles, and in fact, in this paper, it can sometimes have degree 3. There, this is also not a dynamic algorithm. So they sort of give two algorithms here. In one case, there's a special node called Blue Root, and this tries to find, you know, it tries to connect with everybody in its neighborhood, and then they connect with everybody in the neighborhood. So you're just sort of forming a spanning tree of the network. But the problem, of course, is that you may discover many more nodes than 7. Let's say 7 is the maximum you can have. You may discover many more. So then they sort of say that if that happens, then you can reorganize so that some of them will actually become masters now and so on. Okay? What I mean by, that's my word, not dynamic, is that, you know, all the nodes exist in the beginning, and they don't give a procedure for joining and leaving and things like that. What happens if a node wants to leave the network? What kind of reconfiguration do you have to do? That's the kind of thing I mean by dynamic. By dynamic, I mean you must give a procedure for that. How does a node leave the network? What happens if a node leaves the network and the network becomes disconnected? Do you have to start all over or what? That kind of thing do you have to take care of? That's what I mean by dynamic. Yes, that's what I'm using. They don't use that word. I'm using this word. Okay, the problem is that they don't really have any analysis of the algorithm, and they have some simulation results and so on. Now, there's a couple more, since I'm running out of time, and I'd like to tell you a bit about our work as well. I'll just tell you that there's a couple more papers, you know, where nodes are not necessarily in transmission range. I was not aware of Ivan's work till this morning, but at the end, they can't even guarantee that the network is connected. They say that with high probability, the network will be connected, but in fact, we don't know what this high probability is. I think they say most likely it's going to be connected, and we're going to be happy. Okay, so let me tell you a bit about our work. I'm going to tell you about our algorithm for topology construction. This is, as I said, joint work. And what are we actually trying to solve? As I said, there are many possible problems. So what is the problem we are trying to solve? We want to have a dynamic algorithm, so we want to be able to handle nodes leaving and joining with minimal work. To form scatter nets with provably low diameter, we want to give bounds on the diameter of the network. High connectivity, we want to give bounds on the connectivity of the network. and a small number of piconets. So what are the assumptions we are working with? All nodes are within transmission range of each other. So the visibility graph, if you think about it that way, is actually a complete graph. So anybody could have a connection with anybody else. The maximum number of nodes in a piconet is fixed to some P. Okay, it could be 8, as in Bluetooth, or it could be anything. And then the degree of bridge nodes is fixed to Q plus 1. Well, why exactly Q plus 1 rather than Q will become clear. So we can fix the degree of bridge nodes to be almost anything. And bridges are slaves in all piconets that they participate in. So we don't allow a bridge to be a master in one piconet and a slave in another. We don't allow that. These are the assumptions that we work with. Okay. So how do we, what have we done? Let me first give you a rough idea. I have a little bit more detail on the results later, but just to give you an idea, we have an algorithm which is dynamic. The diameter is polylogarithmic. The connectivity is high. And the routing, we also give a routing algorithm which is specifically tailored to the topology that we will construct. So while any other ad hoc routing algorithm might also work here, ours will be more efficient because we'll be able to find the shortest path because we know what topology we are working with. Whereas normally ad hoc routing algorithms, they cannot assume anything about the topology. No, they don't necessarily discover each other. No. Okay, before I put this, I should have given some introduction. It's a bit of a shock. What is this suddenly? So our construction uses design theory. We use projective planes in particular. And this slide may look a bit intimidating, but it really isn't. Because we're just using some properties of projective plane. Okay, we're not going really deep into it. So what is a finite projective plane? It's just a way to decompose a set of capital Q equals Q square plus Q plus 1 elements into blocks of size little q plus 1 so that any pair of elements appears in exactly one block. So rather than looking at that, let's just look at this example. There are two examples here. So if I take Q equals 1, what I have is, what I need to have is a way of decomposing 1 square plus 1 plus 1. That's 3 elements. I need to have a way of decomposing a set of 3 elements into blocks of size 2 such that any pair of elements appears in exactly one block. So you take any pair of elements here, they appear in exactly one block. Now this is projective plane 2, 2, okay? What do I have here? If I take any pair of elements here, 2, they will appear in exactly one block. 4, 5 doesn't appear in any other block, only in one block. Okay, so I have 7 elements here. I need to decompose them into blocks such that I have this property. Blocks of size 3 in the case when Q is 2. Okay. Now, we use a crucial property of these projective planes. First of all, when Q is a power of a prime number, these are known to exist. Okay. There is a way of doing this. There is a way of decomposing a set of elements. So we know that they exist. And in fact, the way of doing it is pretty straightforward. You can sort of gather a method from these two examples. But we use a critical property, which is that in a projective plane, GP to Q, I don't know why GP, PG. The number of blocks is capital Q. So if I have 7 elements, I have the elements 1 to 7, I'm going to have 7 blocks here. Okay? And similarly here, I have 3 elements. The elements 1, 2, 3, I'm going to have 3 blocks here. And not only that, each element belongs to little q plus 1 block. So here Q was 1. So each element belongs to 2 blocks. Let's look at the element 2. It belongs here and here. Over here, the element 3 should belong to 2 plus 1, 3 blocks. So if you look at 3, it appears in this block, and in this block. It appears in 3 blocks. Okay, so we have this property which we are using. These things were well known before. Okay, so what do we do here? Another slide with a lot of text, but I have a figure coming right after. what we are going to do is, the basic idea behind our construction algorithm is what we call quplication. This capital Q comes from the Q of the previous slide, the projective planes. Okay? So this, what is quplication? It's a method to build larger scatter nets from smaller scatter nets. Okay, so it's a recursive construction. To build big scatter nets from small scatter nets. So the idea is, instead of reading this text, let me just show you with an example, and we can come back to the text if necessary. So suppose I have a scatter net, capital this S, all right? We assume that it's made up already of smaller scatter nets, because it's a recursive construction, it is made up of smaller scatter nets. Let's say it's made up of some number of copies of a smaller base scatter net N. Now we want to take this S and we want to use that to make it bigger. We want to build a larger scatter net from this. We're going to take capital Q copies of S. Remember, Q is like, it comes from, it's a parameter of the projective plane. We're going to take Q copies of S and now label three slaves within each of these things here by the elements of the blocks in a projective plane and merge things with the same label. Let me show you an example that should make it clearer, maybe. So let's say P equals 8, like our Bluetooth, according to Bluetooth specification, P is 8. Number of elements in a PicoNet is 8. And now I'm going to choose Q equals 1, capital Q equals, capital Q is simply little q square plus q plus 1. So it's determined by little q. Now what is this Q? Let me just give you an idea right away. Q plus 1 is going to be my degree of the bridge nodes. Okay, so if you tell me you want the degree of the bridge nodes to be 2, I have to choose little q equals 1. If you tell me degree of bridge nodes should be 3, I'll choose little q equals 2. Okay, so that's what little q is. Now, let's say I have a base scatter net, which is just a piconet. This is a master and 7 slaves. I have a piconet here. How do I duplicate it? How do I make a bigger scatter net out of it? I'm going to first take this. Q, capital Q here is 3, so this is really triplication. So I triplicate it, I have 3 piconets now, and now I label any 3 slaves that I have here by the blocks of the projective plane. So for these parameters, Q equals 1, I get 1, 2, 2, 3, 3, 1. These are the blocks of the projective plane. So I'm going to label them like this, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3, 1. And now, any 2 slaves with the same label, I'm going to merge. So this is just to describe the protocol. Of course, in reality, we don't merge them. We don't even create the second one in the first place. It connects as a bridge. Okay? When we actually construct it dynamically, it's not that we have these 3 things and then we merge things. We just don't even have it in the first place. But just to describe it. So here now, these things are going to be the bridge nodes. So the idea is that by doing this duplication, the different subscatter nets or piconets are connected in the same way as blocks are connected in a projective plane. Okay, so we can use those properties and now prove things about the
How do you recognize it belongs to a block?
What do you mean? Like, how does one know that it's a...
Yeah, so how do you form the blocks?
The blocks are... We know how to get these blocks. I mean, there's a standard algorithm to get these blocks. So, for example, if you want the bridge nodes to be of degree 2, then the projective plane is just simply this, 1, 2, 2, 3, 3, 1, that's it. So how do I choose these? How do I choose this to be 1, 2? Is that what you're asking?
Do you have IDs on the nodes so they know that I am 1?
No. So the way it might actually work is like this. So if I'm a master, the first slave I have, I'm going to call it 1, 1 and, 1 and 2. Okay? But now when this guy connects, he knows he has to connect, you know, this one has to be actually the same as this. So he's going to connect here. So the master, in a sense, can give you the label. You are going to be 1, 2, 2, 3.
Okay.
And now once you're... It doesn't really matter who it is. It has to be some 3 slaves. It doesn't really matter who exactly it is. But you will probably do it as the first 2 nodes that arrive as your slaves. Okay? But it doesn't have to be. I could also make it the last 2 nodes. It doesn't really matter. Okay, so now, as you see here, well, how do I repeat this? I mean, okay, so I took a piconet and now I have 3 and they're connected and everything. I have a scatter net for this. This is great. What do I do next? How do I repeat this? Well, one thing I could do is I could take this as my scatter net to be duplicated next and make another 3 of these and again say 1, 2. I could do that, but the problem is that the diameter would then grow very badly. What I want to do is I want to use the same thing as a base scatter net. Okay? So this way my diameter doesn't grow as fast. So let me just show you an example of what I mean. The first A and B are what we already did. I just showed that. A and B are what we just did. I had 3 piconets and they are now interconnected. Now what do I do? So the next step of duplication, I triplicate it again, but now connections are formed not just one between these two and one between these two and one between these two. But as you see, each base catenet here, I find two free slaves. Okay, so I'm going to say 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2 over here, and similarly 2, 3, 2, 3, 2, 3, 3, 1, 3, 1, 3. In each base catenet, I do this process of labeling the slaves, and I interconnect. Okay, so over here, all one over here will be connected to one over here. The one over here is connected to the one over here. The one over here is connected to the one over here. In this way, the diameter of the next level scatternet, okay, is equal to the diameter of the base scatternet plus the diameter of the previous scatternet that I actually created copies of. So the diameter grows less slowly. There's more connections, essentially, between the... Sorry? I can't... They're all within transmission range. Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
Yeah, that is the model we are looking at. Yeah. No. So this is why, this is the way I'm describing it so far. It sounds like it because I'm just saying you have these and you have to. But really, the scatternet is formed by a series of join and leave operations. So it joins one node at a time, and you can figure out from the last node that joined, you can figure out, because we give a labeling scheme, you can figure out who you should be connected to. So you only connect to one or two. And the three nodes that are already there, most of them don't have to be aware of your existence. Okay, I'm describing this so that you can see what the construction, what the final topology looks like. But it's not constructed exactly like this. This is just so that you have an understanding of the topology. So actually, as you see, we can keep doing this procedure till I have three slaves in each base catenet. The base catenet here was the piconet. I still have two slaves here. I have three free slaves. So I could repeat this one more time. And in fact, what I get looks like this. My co-author drew this pretty picture. I didn't. But so you can keep repeating this process of duplication. It's already 3 o'clock. As long as there are free slaves available in the base catenet. And when there are not enough free slaves, like in this case, at some point you run out of free slaves to again connect, at that point you have to choose a different base catenet. And there's many choices for what this base catenet might be. It might be the result of one duplication of n, result of two duplications. So in this figure, for instance, now I have every master has only one slave left. Okay, it doesn't have two slaves left. So I couldn't do another duplication at this point. So now I can still triplicate this, but as a base catenet, I could use this, or I could use this whole thing, or I could even use the entire network as the base catenet. So far, I was using only the piconet as a base catenet. Okay? But I could, there are many choices, as I said, for what should be the base catenet in the next stage. Okay. So there's it's really 3 o'clock, I'll just show you the results and go on to conclude. So this just showed you duplication, which was a basic idea behind our scatternets, but we can use it to build a family of complete projective scatternets. You know, you can it's just a way of defining which, you know, I've specified one way here, but I've made it clear that there's many possible ways. Okay, of defining what exactly the base catenet should be. Essentially, this will tell you, this will define a particular family, and we prove that the particular family we have is well defined, and also that it is, the sizes of the scatternets and these complete scatternets are a strictly increasing sequence, so you can actually have something in between as well by just adding some nodes, half formed complete scatternet, an incomplete scatternet. So here is just some results. We can see that the degree of all masters is less than or equal to p minus 1. The degree of bridge nodes is at most q plus 1. And most piconets are full. There is, I think this is a concern you raised, there are people who say, well, the piconets should not be full because, that's one way perhaps that, you have more capacity. You should not really fill the piconet. And another reason might be that in a large-scale network, if you're already full, you cannot take on somebody that only you are in the position to take on. Nobody else is in the position to take on. So it may not make always sense to fill the piconets, but I believe in a small scale network where everybody is in transmission range, this is not really a concern. The diameter is log square n, log square log n. The n connectivity, just to skip the notation, basically we show that it grows up to a certain point and then it stays fixed. It can't become higher and higher anyway. As we said, there's an upper bound on the m connectivity. Okay, the connectivity is not that high at lower levels, and really it's not reasonable to make it very high for small networks, because if we did that, then we would have to break connections and cause disruptions to the network. Okay, and finally we have a bound also on the number of piconets. So n by p minus 1 is the smallest number you can have, but we have n by p minus 1 by q plus 1. So for example, if q is 1, then it's like it's twice as many as the lower bound. Okay. I'm afraid I really don't have time to show you the rest of the stuff. I thought it was too long anyway, and then I also had a lot of questions. So I will skip all that. I will just tell you that we provide a mechanism for labeling nodes. It's a simple virtual labeling of nodes, which makes it possible for us to do this in a dynamic fashion, for nodes to join and leave. And it also makes it possible to give a simple routing algorithm. The routing basically works like hypercubic routing, since that you know, according to the labels, you try to correct one component of the label at every step. That's the way hypercube routing works. Okay, so it's both the dynamic nature and the routing work on the basis of the labeling scheme, which is a simple labeling scheme. Okay. A couple of other issues. I'm concluding now. I just and mentioning some open problems. So issues that we don't consider at all. It may be that nodes that exchange a lot of traffic should be in the same piconet instead of just doing it in some. We don't take notice of such issues at all. Okay, we assume we don't know anything about what possible traffic there's going to be. But it makes sense that nodes are going to exchange a lot of traffic, they should be in the same piconet. I already mentioned this, for large scale networks it may make sense not to fill piconets so as to enable further connections later on. We should also have metrics to measure all the metrics I mentioned are sort of static metrics, in the sense that you have a topology, you can figure out these metrics. Okay, but you should also have metrics to measure the performance of the scatter net when traffic is actually going through it. And then the scheduling of traffic in a scatter net is a completely different topic which people are also working on. How do you schedule, for instance, bridge nodes and so on. Okay, scatter net formation is a new topic. There's not a whole lot of work done on it. There's a number of models that can be considered. I gave some of those models here. There are many qualities that sound nice, but most of them go against each other. So a trade-off has to be made between these qualities. We can't have the best in everything. We showed an algorithm for the dynamic construction of scatter nets when all nodes are within transmission range of each other, and bridge nodes can only play slave-slave roles. So they have degree 2, and they can only be a slave in 2 piconets. And the scatter nets that results, they have low diameter, high connectivity, and are easy to route in. So just a few problems that come to mind is we haven't shown that our algorithm is optimal. In fact, it's even difficult to find what the exact definition of optimality should be, since we are trying to optimize so many different parameters at the same time. And as I said, some of them go against each other, so you can't really have the best in all. So you should pick some things and try to optimize one. or a completely different strategy. Similar things can be done. It doesn't have to be a projective plane. You could also, for example, use a hypercubic kind of network and have a similar idea of duplication. Okay. We would like to know if our strategy can be adapted to the case when not all nodes are in transmission range of each other. Just thinking about it a little bit seems that it might be that these ideas might translate not exactly the same way, but maybe we'll be able to do something like this for the case when nodes are not in transmission range of each other. We've not considered the case when nodes can play master-slave roles. And, I don't know if very similar ideas will work or very completely different. It's just something we've not thought about. But it's certainly what is known out there for this case, as I said, is the networks are not even necessarily connected. So there's really nothing known about it. Okay, as far as I know. I'm sorry for going over time. Usually I'm under time because I speak fast, but yes.